the B-Fox and B-Frank show. We have a massive, gargantuan week five ahead of us. But before we can get to that, let's take a look back at week four. Game of the day for many. I would include myself in this group. Clemson-Wake Forest. A golden opportunity for Wake Forest to continue to build on last season's, you know, kind of surprising success and really establish themselves as a legitimate contender by knocking off Clemson here. Unfortunately for them, unable to finish the job, losing in double overtime in a game that I think we can agree for the most part, they seem to be the better team.
Yeah, 100%. And this, if you have to ask Wake Forest how you want this game to play out, Grant, you never want the opposing quarterback to throw for 370 yards and five touchdowns, but this is about as close as you could get to the way that Wake Forest wanted this game to play out. They wanted a shootout style. That's where they thrive. That's where they're best. Sam Hartman was sensational in this game, 337 yards and six touchdowns. They got production from basically all over the field, even if the run game was a little slow in terms of just keeping up pace, but they did what they needed to do until it came down to the final few snaps and they just could not get the job done.
Yeah, it's certainly the style of game that Wake Forest wanted to play. You don't love to be the team that DJ carves up after what has been a slow start to the season, but Wake Forest's offense was clicking. They were very efficient for the vast majority of the game. It was really late in the game and in overtime where Clemson seemed to realize that they have a superior defense. They were using that to get after Sam Hartman a little more, give him less time to pick them apart, and ultimately that was a bit of the difference. So Clemson is certainly not at the level that they were, you know, 3-4 years ago, much closer to last year's unit, but a little improved offensively, it seems like, in the early going. And this was a game that they absolutely had to have to kind of shake off some of the skeletons from last year. But, I mean, it was anything but certain for a lot of this.
Yeah, like you said, Wake, I mean, really in the second half, well, the third quarter, Wake kind of put their stamp on the game, took the lead. That early touchdown by Will Shipley looked like it was going to settle the ship, and then really the offenses just kind of sputtered out until overtime.
Absolutely. I mean, Sam Hartman, not much more you can ask for. Six touchdowns on the day. Jamal Banks had a career game for the Demon Deacons as well. I mean, DJ, as we mentioned, best game by far of the season. Shipley, over 120 yards on the ground as well. The offense that showed out, it was really just not unlike Bedlam of years past. Who will eventually be able to get a stop? It was Clemson. So, yeah, just really, really big missed opportunity for Wake Forest. Just one that they will be looking back on with some regrets for a good while.
Mm-hmm.
Now we move along to the team that we love to talk about every week on this show, Texas A&M. We're able to hold on and knock off Arkansas in Jerry World. Late missed field goal for Arkansas. Many have said, some have said at least, potentially due to the higher goalposts in an NFL stadium. Maybe that's good in college. I don't know. This brings up the kick was good memories for me. But as it stands, A&M able to hold on for a hard-fought two-point win over Arkansas. And after a blip against App State, it does seem like the Aggies have turned things around.
They have, and it's defense first. Like we've said this entire time, they're going to win games based on what their defense can do. They forced a huge turnover of KJ Jefferson, forcing that fumble. He, who was, outside of that play, the best player on the field in this game by quite a margin. But yeah, Max Johnson did just enough to get the game over the line, and the running attack for A&M looked very solid. But really shocking to see Arkansas go up 14-0 quick, and then A&M actually have the offensive ability to fight back and make this a game and then win it at the end.
That was really the play of the game. The fumble in the red zone that A&M ran back when Arkansas was trying to go up 21-7 at that point. Credit to A&M, 23 unanswered after falling behind 14-0. And if Max Johnson can play like this every game, I think the defense is good enough to make that hold up. It certainly wasn't a great game by any stretch of the imagination, but for an A&M quarterback, it's something they'll take. And Devin Achane, this is the guy that we kind of expected in the preseason. He put up big numbers as a change of pace back. Now this is his show. You're expecting to see games like this. He showed out at a very big time, 159 yards and a touchdown on 19 carries. Big time difference maker A&M desperately needs on offense. So if you're Jimbo, you can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief. This was the win over Miami. It seems like the Canes are really not a good football team. So you kind of see more of this week, but Arkansas has been playing really good football for the most part. Their defense had some questions, was not gashed by any stretch of the imagination, but this was a defense you had to take advantage of. And A&M was able to put forth a much better offensive performance than we've seen the last few weeks. And A&M's defense, of course, showed out, really took away everyone offensively for Arkansas, who is not KJ Jefferson, making him be the focal point of the rushing attack too. And that ultimately made a big difference in this one too.
How concerned are you about Arkansas's defense? I think that was the biggest question that came out of this game for me.
I mean, I think we kind of know where Arkansas fits in the hierarchy of the West now. I think this was kind of the game where maybe they move ahead of A&M, but we know they're not Alabama's level. I mean, we'll get an opportunity to see just how they stack up this week, but I don't think there's been anything that we've seen that would indicate that Arkansas is a better team than Alabama. It's tough because, 23 to A&M is not a disaster, but you know that that's more success than the Aggies have had moving the ball for a few
weeks.
Against
any FBS team.
Right. So it's not ideal. I think there are going to be some better offenses that can expose it. We'll see what Bryce Young is able to do this week. Certainly not the last time Arkansas is going to face a tough opponent this year. So I think it will be a lot of games where KJ Jefferson is asked to put the team on his back, so to speak, and, account for four or five touchdowns himself just to keep the Razorbacks in it or ahead of whoever they're playing.
Yeah, I think the spin zone here, though, is Arkansas has held a quarterback now under 300 passing yards in a game. So
it's true.
That's what you can look forward to. It we'll talk about it later because obviously it's the game coming up, but really leaves a lot of questions of what an Alabama team can do to this defense.
Yeah, I mean, Max Johnson only thrown for 151 yards is pretty tough when you're A&M. That's why you're happy that Achane was able to shoulder so much of the load offensively, take some of the pressure. But it's kind of one of those things we talked about on last week's show. If you are going to have a especially productive passing week, it should be this week. So I guess that's a moral victory for Arkansas, but I'm sure they would much rather have the actual win here.
Most likely, yes.
Speaking of moral victories, Florida potentially taking one against Tennessee. And when you're talking about defenses you might need to worry about, I would throw Tennessee up there with Arkansas now as well. Tennessee was able to hold on for a 5-point win over the Gators in a series that they have historically struggled in. So that is an accomplishment, certainly. But we have talked at length about this on this show. Anthony Richardson, really not an elite level passer. He throws for over 450 yards against Tennessee. That has to be at least a little bit cause for concern.
Big time. And he did some damage with his legs, I think is the way to put it. 62 yards and 2 scores. Really effective, obviously, in the red zone because it's just such a hard thing to do in college to be able to cover 4 receivers and also a dual threat quarterback like Richardson. But otherwise, they contained the run game of Florida. ETN had 35 yards, Wright had 26. Like, they really didn't do much on the ground. It was the fact that Richardson threw 44 times, 20 of them were incomplete passes, 19 were incomplete, one was an interception, and he still threw for 453 yards. Like, when he was connecting for big plays. Every receiver that had a catch for Florida went for at least double-digit yards on one of their receptions. This is troubling if you're the Tennessee secondary.
And at the same time, Tennessee largely did what you should do against Florida, which is take away the running game. You know, there's a stable of capable backs that Florida has, and those guys, Etienne, Wright, Johnson, Tennessee kept under wraps. Only 3.2 yards a carry for those guys. You want to make Anthony Richardson turn into a vertical passer and try to shut down Florida that way. They were able to get pressure on him, force him into some tough downfield throws, but to his credit, Richardson and Florida converted on a lot of those. So it's unfortunate because the game plan largely worked, but there were some breakdowns in the secondary, really on the back end, not taking advantage of the pressure that the Volunteers were able to generate, turn that into turnovers or incompletions, and just make this a more comfortable win as it should have been, presumably.
Cover the spread, some would say.
Yes, that is part of it as well.
Richardson, 18.9 yards per completion. Like, that's insane. And you cannot have that happen because most teams, better teams than Florida, will make you pay for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's fortunate that Hendon Hooker played exceptionally well himself.
Yeah, he was very good.
Know, running the ball, very effective. Passing, very effective. And, you know, it was fewer shots than Florida was forced to take. It wasn't as many air yards per throw. It was more under control, seemingly. And that's something that Heupel has definitely brought to Tennessee. But yeah, this is when you're happy that you're able to get out of there alive, so to speak. But yeah, it's too many big plays that the defense gave up here.
Totally. Completely agree.
And the other good thing for Tennessee, you know, just tack on at the end here, no Cedric Tillman, still able to be very productive offensively. They will certainly take that.
Absolutely.
Who is your big winner for week 4?
I'm going with the Pac-12. And the reason is they are alive in the playoff race. I think the Big 12 hurt themselves a lot this week. Down goes Oklahoma. Texas loses again, which should completely knock them out of the playoff race because for God knows what reason they moved up in the polls after losing to Alabama. USC is 4-0 and they've looked very good. UCLA is quietly 4-0. Washington has been playing great football. They're 4-0. Oregon and Utah have come back to life after early season losses. Was a play away from beating Notre Dame, or at least going to overtime with Notre Dame. Oregon State and Washington State look like they're solid football teams as well. So the top half, really more than the top half of that league, is high quality. There's chances to get big wins for those top teams and continue to move their way up the rankings. So I think the Pac-12 right now has the inside track over the Big 12 in terms of getting a team into the playoff here. It will be tight. I don't know what it'll look like at the end of the season because I find it hard to believe that they're going to keep a one-loss Alabama or Georgia out of the playoff at this rate. And that leaves obviously two places left, and an undefeated Clemson probably gets the nod no matter what. So you're really jockeying for position there between Ohio State, most likely, maybe a Michigan, and then the top of the Pac-12 and the Big 12. But I think they did themselves a lot of favors this weekend by picking up some big wins and really just not having those top teams fall like we saw in the Big 12.
One out of Washington or UCLA will move to 5-0. They do play each other this week. Yeah, I think Utah has rebounded nicely. Comfortable win. Oregon got a good challenge from Washington State, but they're still perfect since the Georgia loss. USC is a team that is a little troubling. Tough game against Oregon State that I think most would readily admit they were kind of fortunate to get out of there alive. 4 turnovers for Chance Nolan, 4 interceptions from the USC defense that, you know, we can't really expect a Lincoln Riley team to rely on every week. Fortunately, Travis Dye, the run game, kind of bailed them out a little bit there, but undefeated in the top 10. There's a contingent now. There's 4 teams in the top 15. UCLA is knocking on the door as well. Washington State, of course, fell last week. They had the great win at Camp Randall, though. So I think Pac-12, I would agree, much better shape than the Big 12, who's got a huge matchup of their own coming up this week. Oklahoma State, currently the highest ranked team at 9th. They were off last week. Now they've got a tough road game coming up. The narrative since week one, when it was all doom and gloom for the Pac-12, has certainly flipped a bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, again, the biggest thing in my mind is that the middle of the conference is playing good football right now, which we were not able to say the last couple seasons, where you really looked at the top, you said you got to win these games because these teams just aren't very good. And now they could be needle moving wins as you move further and further through the season.
Things are looking great outside the state of Arizona, for sure.
Yes. Yes. That's a fact.
I am going to go with Minnesota as my big winner this week, who some have called the team to beat in the Big Ten West. I think that certainly still holds true. Just eviscerated Michigan State, got out to a 34-0 win before holding on. They are back to rowing the boat in Minneapolis. The defense was kind of the biggest story for me here, because you knew what they had offensively. Mo Ibrahim looks like he is fully recovered from injury. Tanner Morgan had as many touchdown passes as incompletions in this game. He's been doing it for seemingly ever. And as big a story as Minnesota is here, I think you have to look at Mel Tucker as well, because it's the second straight game that the pass defense has been absolutely shredded. Michael Penix Jr., now Tanner Morgan. Good quarterback, certainly, but not a ton of resistance defensively. But Minnesota right now, you know, it's not a lot of competition in the Big Ten West. Maybe Wisconsin, Iowa, those are just kind of the constants at the top there. But everyone else is very clearly flawed. So you take the momentum from a game like this, one of the tougher, in most years, one of the tougher crossover games you're going to have as a Big Ten West team going to Michigan State. They were able to pass this test with flying colors. So I think that bodes very well for the rest of the year.
Yeah, this is a team I really liked in the preseason. We talked about it. Tanner Morgan was back. He struggled after coming on the scene in 2019 with a big flash, just like Minnesota had as a program throughout that. You lose Ibrahim last year, and that kind of takes away a lot of the offensive firepower. They're both back. They both look sensational. Like you said, the defense looks good. Michigan State has a lot of question marks at this point. They really can't run the football. Peyton Thorne has looked pretty susceptible to error, I guess is the way to put it, at quarterback. He threw two more interceptions this week. Hasn't looked comfortable or like a top five returning quarterback in the Big Ten like both of us had thought he was. The run game, like I said, is a real problem, though. 38 yards on 14 carries. I know they were down big early and really had to throw their way back into it. Didn't work. This is a program that has churned out professional running backs year after year after year. You've got to focus and make sure you can get that part of the game going. And like you said, the secondary was absolutely thrashed. Kendall Brooks led the team in tackles. He had 18 tackles. He is a cornerback. He is a defensive back. That is not a good sign when your defensive back is leading the team in tackles.
Yeah, and a lot of the success from last year was so transfer-based. It's hard to sometimes catch lightning in a bottle twice. We saw this with Wisconsin. They got a great transfer quarterback from NC State, Russell Wilson. Hey, we've got a passing attack. Okay, let's go back to the well next year. Let's bring in Danny O'Brien. Not the same thing. Much the same here with Michigan State. Kenneth Walker transfers in from Wake Forest. Outstanding season. A lot of the transfers they got were home runs right away. Try to recreate it. The same thing this year. You bring in Jarek Broussard, one of the actual good players from Colorado's roster. He's not immediately Kenneth Walker, and that's kind of what Michigan State has thrown their hat into, just being a transfer hub a little bit more so than just player development, which you have to be a mix at this point in the college football landscape. But it right. seems a lot like Tuck got that extension, you know, trying to quickly assemble a roster much the same way they did last year, and it's diminishing returns a little bit.
It is. It's not plug and play, and you can't expect, like, Broussard and Walker may be similar in running styles, but they're not the same guy. Like, you just can't expect it to go the exact same way.
Yeah. It would be nice if that's how it worked every time, but
yeah,
it's not.
Find someone of that profile, plug them in, and it'll work every single time.
Who is your big loser from last week?
It's a pretty easy one for me. It's Miami. The Canes, the poor Canes, they got blown out by Middle Tennessee. This really wasn't a close game for a vast majority of it. Middle Tennessee jumped out to a 24-3 lead and did not look back. Chase Cunningham had a huge game, 408 yards, one of the top five in terms of passing yards this week, week four in college football. Jake Garcia gets a lot of playing time after Tyler Van Dyke throws two interceptions in this one. Really did not look very good. Run game did nothing against a Middle Tennessee team that got boat raced by James Madison early in the season and only has wins against Colorado State, who was, I believe, a home underdog against Sacramento State this week and lost by 30+. And then they beat Tennessee State, who is obviously an FCS program. Miami's got a ton of question marks. Defense is not good at all, and their star quarterback is not playing like it. So they've got a lot to figure out here. Not a lot of time because their season is effectively over. You're not making the playoff, obviously, now. Competing for the ACC, possible, but they have a big uphill battle. Fortunately for them, the schedule is pretty easy. North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Duke, and Virginia. Depending on your opinion of Duke, that's probably the toughest game out of those four before they get Florida State, Clemson, and Pitt as three of their last four games. So they've got to figure it out. They've got a little time to do it. Again, the ACC isn't that great as a whole this year, but there are way too many questions about this team on both sides of the football. But they are in the weaker coastal division, so give and take there.
The spin zone you can offer here is Miami has zero conference losses, but this, I think, outweighs a lot of the positives you can take from that spin zone because they just straight up looked bad. This is Van Dyke has seemingly looked worse with each passing week, which is a very discouraging sign. And I mean, that's kind of the guy that was really the reason that many of us were expecting big things in the preseason from Mario Cristobal in year one, you know, whatever big things might be, but we thought, you know, eight wins challenging for a division title, certainly within the realm of possibility, but Miami being back certainly appears to have been overblown because there's no reason that a 25.5, 26 point underdog should just essentially blow out Miami like this. Like it was never really competitive.
Yep.
It was almost one of those things where you kept waiting for Miami to wake up, and then by the time something happened, the game was all but over. It was no longer in the balance. And yeah, this is why critics of Cristobal were, I mean, critical.
Yeah.
As the word goes. But yeah, it seems like there is a lot more building to be done in Miami before we can reasonably expect the Hurricanes to be a factor, because it's certainly not at that point right now.
Absolutely. And the box score is just insane. If you look at this game, the top three receivers for Middle Tennessee, DJ England Chisholm, who had two catches, both of them were touchdowns, 169 yards. He had a 98-yard touchdown and a 71-yard touchdown reception. You've got Jalen Lane, four catches, 130 yards with a long of 89. He somehow did not find the end zone. And then Elijah Metcalf, one catch, 69 yards and a touchdown. So, like, big plays just absolutely destroyed Miami throughout this game. But man, oh man, does their defense need a little work.
Light work for those receivers.
It really is.
Efficient. So it's like that classic Randy Moss screenshot.
Yeah.
That's basically what DJ Chisholm went out there and did on Saturday.
Yeah.
My big loser, Kansas Jayhawks. How are they not ranked?
Yeah.
I make it make sense.
State is ranked.
Yeah. They Kansas State is ranked, and I get it. They beat Oklahoma. That's cool. You just lost to Tulane. Does that not matter anymore?
Who lost at home to Southern Miss?
Yeah, it boggles the mind. I really don't understand it. It's like there are undefeated teams that are basically ahead of Kansas just because, you know, their name isn't Kansas, and also because preseason rankings must die, and they were up there earlier. So like, yeah. You got to keep them there, even though Kansas has a very good resume for, you know, being four games into the season. One win over an FCS school, we can throw that out, but you've got two road wins over West Virginia, over Houston, and then beating previously unbeaten Duke. That's got to count for something. And I really don't understand how, you know, they are the first team out, but if they're 26th and you're telling me that a 500 Florida Gators team is 28th, like I don't understand that at all, outside of just the names are Kansas and Florida. Like, we should be talking about Jalen Daniels as a Heisman candidate, like a legitimate one. Played the three games mentioned against FBS opponents, 13 total touchdowns, zero interceptions. He is carrying this team offensively to the promised lands. They are looking amazing, and I'm very upset that they have not been rewarded by a number next to their name in either poll. And I'm especially upset because I feel like what's definitely going to happen this week is Kansas is going to drop a game to Iowa State, and then everyone's going to be like, well, they're, you know, that's why we didn't rank them. Like,
see, no, Kansas is Kansas again.
Yeah. It's like, that's okay. It's like, let's just look at the product being put out on the field this year and not think of the last, you know, decade or so of Kansas football. But human nature, I guess that's too much to ask. So wanted to give Kansas a shout out because they definitely deserve to be ranked. Lance Leopold doing an outstanding job, and yeah, no one's appreciating it enough.
Yeah. Like you said, Jalen Daniels should be getting the hype that Anthony Richardson gets. Like, that's the perfect way to put it.
I would be okay with that. I would settle for that, but I would also like Kansas to be ranked.
Agreed.
Before it's too late.
But then again, this is just the age-old battle that we've been waging for, 7 years publicly now against the AP poll.
Yeah. I don't care for it. But anyway, we move onward and upward. We've got five. Let's be honest, there should only be four ranked unranked matchups this week, but
yeah,
a few people put Florida State in there, so here we find ourselves. We start in the SEC. We alluded to this game earlier. It's Arkansas again in a ranked matchup. They will be hosting Alabama, who just hammered Vanderbilt but embarrassingly gave up 3 points to the Commodores. Nick Saban will definitely be upset about that. Who do you like here?
It's hard to pick against Alabama right now. It is a road game. Arkansas, they'll have a little extra juice in this one. KJ Jefferson, again, has been the best player on the field in basically every single game they've played for the last, I don't know, couple months, and then into last season. I think he can keep it close early, but Alabama just has way too much firepower. And like we've seen, this Arkansas defense just has too many question marks for me to feel confident in them going up against Bryce Young in this offense for Alabama. So I'm going to take the Tide. I think it stays close, and then they'll break it open a little bit in the second half.
Yes, this feels like an insane statement to make, and I'm going to regret it in a couple weeks when it's overkill, but it feels like we're not talking about Alabama enough. For the number two team in America, Georgia's been getting the lion's share of the attention. And I mean, after last week and the struggle against Kent State, that they might be swinging the other direction. But I think there's potential in this game for Arkansas to allow A&M to beat them twice. I think that was a game that they really felt they should have had. Let slip away from them. The late missed field goal, not sitting well as well. And you come out a little flat, little lethargic, even with Alabama there. Bryce Young is going to make you pay. I think that will happen. I think this is a game that Alabama wins by two touchdowns. Over to the ACC, We've got Clemson. We've got NC State coming into the top 10. DJ had a great game last week. At this point in the season, I don't think many expected DJ to have better numbers than Devin Leary, but that is where we find ourselves. Which way are you leaning in this one?
This is a fun one. It's a shocking top 10 game, I think is how I would describe it. But this NC State just struggles on the road. For whatever reason, that's what they do. They last season, they had three losses at Mississippi State, at Miami, at Wake Forest. You can forgive the Wake Forest loss because Wake was ACC's probably best team. Yeah, I'll say it confidently. Wake Forest was the ACC's best team last year, full stop. They aren't the same team at home as they are on the road. And we've seen that already this season with the near loss to East Carolina, who is not nearly as good as we all thought. They just lost to Navy this past week, who has been pretty awful throughout the early part of the season. But we respect the troops, so shout out Navy.
I was going to say. Don't be a troop disrespecter.
It's a backhanded compliment, but also at the same time, like, I needed to hammer home my point. So I'm going to take Clemson begrudgingly. I think this is a close game. I don't know that we're going to see anywhere near the offensive output that we saw last week. I think from Clemson, that is. I would expect them to give a heavy dose of the run game. Will Shipley should get the ball 20 times, 20 plus times in this ball game. Really keep the ball out of Devin Leary's hands. And then force NC State to run. Like, they have really not run the football very well. 252 yards from Sumo Kernyogbe. I can never pronounce that guy's name, but he's their leading rusher, and he's only carried it 39 times so far this season. They love to throw the ball. Obviously, they have a great quarterback in Devin Leary, but force them to run it, and I think Clemson gets this win.
Yeah, I mean, NC State has blown out the two extremely bad teams they've played. They got aging better, good win over Texas Tech. But yeah, week one was really the game that kind of stood out to me as, you know, maybe we are jumping the gun a little bit. If we're not, this is the opportunity to show us.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're not going to play a better opponent this year than Clemson unless you're able to sneak into the playoff, which I don't think will happen. NC State's defense has been playing really well. That, I think, has been consistent throughout the season, but yeah, I think this is a game that Clemson's going to be able to control. I think it's going to be another close one. I think Clemson is going to find itself in a lot of dogfights this year, but unlike last week, I do think this will be more defensive-minded game just because NC State, while they have talented people on offense, not to the level that Wake Forest does. I like Clemson here. Game in the 20s.
Yeah, agreed.
We've got Kentucky up to number 7 in the polls this week. Going to Ole Miss, take on the top 15 Rebs. How do we feel about this one?
I like Ole Miss. I like Ole Miss. I think that they just have the ability to run the ball much better. I know Kentucky has a stable of backs that they have been relying on. Will Levis has actually played pretty well through the early part of the season. I think the two big things for me is Jackson Dart doesn't make too many mistakes, and they've just got so many different guys that can run the ball, including Dart, Evans and Judkins, two of the better rushers in all of the SEC and the entire country. Defensively, I think they can cause some problems, but I think this will be another game in the 20s where Ole Miss should be able to squeak it out. I think home field really matters in this one.
Yeah, it's night and day when you can pair these two rushing attacks. Like, 308 rushing yards, 6 yards a carry again last week for Ole Miss against Tulsa. Kentucky really struggled to run the ball against Northern Illinois, who, love DeKalb, love my Huskies, just not a very good football team, one you should be struggling with. And Will Levis played well. He was running for his life a lot in that game. They were able to get pressure on him pretty consistently. The good news is Ole Miss is not a super defensive-minded team. I have real concerns about Kentucky being able to score enough to keep up. Kentucky does have a superior defense, so they can lean on that a little bit to try to keep them in the game. But at the end of the day, I think this is a game that Ole Miss's rushing attack is really going to be able to wear down Kentucky. I might even put it a little ahead of Florida's rushing attack that Kentucky was able to handle earlier this year. And yeah, being a home game, that will help as well. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go with the Rebs. Is that 3 for 3 so far?
3 for 3.
All right. Let's see if anything changes here. Big matchup in the Big 12 for top billing at this point. Oklahoma State going to Baylor. Baylor has rebounded pretty nicely after the double OT road loss they suffered to BYU. Oklahoma State undefeated, some would argue untested to this point. Who do you like here?
I've been an Oklahoma State guy for far too long to go against them right here. Really tough road environment. I think Baylor has a lot to prove in this game. Obviously, that BYU loss still sits heavy for the Bears, but I'm gonna take Oklahoma State. I'm trusting in Spencer Sanders. I'm trusting that they can get the run game off the ground, which really they haven't been able to do yet. Dominic Richardson, just 215 yards on the ground. Sanders, big thing, hasn't turned it over much. He has one interception on the season. Accuracy has been there. Shapen has been shaky at times. We saw the BYU defense cause some problems for the offense of Baylor. I think Oklahoma State's got a better defense than BYU does, and I think they're able to squeak this one out.
I'm going the other way. I kind of figured that this might be the game we differ. I mean, Vegas basically has this as a pick'em, or if it was at a neutral site, should have included that. So Baylor as the home team here, I think, is going to make a very big difference. And while Oklahoma State does have some of the pieces from last year without Knowles, without some of the key contributors, they have looked susceptible at times, most notably the opener against Central Michigan. I think Baylor is exceptionally well coached and so fundamentally sound on both sides of the ball under Dave Aranda that you're going to be bullied by this home crowd. And I'm expecting an instant classic, no pressure on the two teams involved, but we saw what can happen when they met in the Big 12 championship game last year. I would expect something similar in terms of competitiveness, but I think it's going to be one that Baylor's able to squeak out at the end, maybe by a field goal, but Baylor's going to take this one.
Great weather for the game too. Hopefully that helps.
There we go. Lastly, another ACC ranked matchup, Wake Forest going to Florida State. Florida State is undefeated. Wake Forest, just the one loss, obviously, last week in double OT to Clemson. What do you like here?
I like Wake. I think it's going to be a tough game. Jordan Travis has played very well. If he can stay on the field, they've got a real good opportunity to win this game. The run game has looked good as well. Trayshawn Ward has run it really well, and they've been able to use him in a bunch of different situations. Wilson has been a revelation at wide receiver, which seems ridiculous to say because the man is 6'7", and Herman Edwards, the late Herman Edwards, just could not figure out how to use him at ASU, so now he's at Florida State. I just love Sam Hartman. I think he and A.T. Perry are such a good duo, and the defense, while not great, can figure out a way to get a couple stops here. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, and I think that, again, that plays into Wake's favor. So I think they win this by a touchdown.
I think Florida State has put together one game this year that maybe you could look into considering them a ranked team, and that was last week over Boston College. But then we need to remember that BC has won one game this year, and that was against Maine. So disappointing season Chestnut Hill so far. Florida State, the games we've seen from them is just kind of living on the edge. Like, I feel like LSU lost that game with, you know, multiple special teams blunders a little bit more so than Florida State won it.
Right.
They're able to come back and knock off Louisville with a backup quarterback. So that counts for something, certainly. But I still look at this game and I don't really see Florida State being able to keep up with Wake Forest offensively. I am higher on Florida State's offense this year than I have been for a few years, I will say that. But Wake Forest just on a little bit higher level, even playing this game on the road, I still like the Demon Deacons to take this one and make Florida State stay in the rankings a pretty short one.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a gift for Wake Forest. They lose a very winnable game to Clemson that could have vaulted them very high up in the polls and in really the mind of the playoff committee. Now they get the opportunity to play another top 25 game, which really probably shouldn't be a top 25 game, and have the ability to add that to their resume. So this is absolutely a gift, and they need to take advantage of it.
They absolutely do. So, you know, this is a gift from the AP poll. The other thing they gave us, zero votes for Texas this week. So some,
thank God,
people being reasonable. So that is something. We will end there. Check us out later this week. We'll be back on the Spread Option podcast for betting look at these games and many, many more, I'm sure. And we will be back to break down these matchups and all the games from week 5 on this show next week. So we will see you then.